gather round. I'm glad everybody came out tonight. As we stand on our neighborhood corner, know that this fire that's burning represents the passion you have. Listen. I recognize all of you. Every creed and color. With that being said,
We had!
Say what?
Now beat that.
Oh, yeah!
Now what we want you all to do is sit back, y'all. And just relax, y'all. Sit back, y'all. And just relax, y'all. Sit back, y'all. And just relax, y'all. And if you dig it, let me hear your finger snap, y'all.
Now, before I finish, let me just say, I did not come here to show out. Did not come here to impress you. Because to tell you the truth, when I leave here, I'm gone. And I don't care what you think about me. But just remember, when it hits the fan, brother, whether it's next year, 10 years, 20 years from now, you'll never be able to say that these brothers lied to you, Jack.
Okay, I'll reload it.
From the sports bars to the stands, we are the voice of the fans. You are now plugged into your sports mixtape. This is the Section 357 show, where we always have the best seats in the house, and you are plugged in with your Ball Street Journal reporters. You're dealing with Floyd and Ron today. Hopefully all is well wherever you are. Ron, how you doing, man?
I'm doing excellent, man. You know, this is my time of the year. You know, I like the NFL, but I love the NBA. So we're going to talk about some of the on-the-court and off-the-court issues in the NBA as a new season is upon us, 2014-2015, what the league could look like in a couple years. So we're going to hit to all parts of the court today. Floyd, down there in ATL, big-time Hawks fan. How are you, man?
Feeling good, feeling great, man. Always a pleasure and a privilege to have this conversation and to share that with our fans. As usual, you can find us on Twitter at Section 357. Find us online at Section357.com. Big shot, Ron. The NBA season is here. And you, sir, as usual, take a big picture look at the season as it's going to play out. You do your annual column. The upcoming season as it was, to give all of our listeners and fans out there a good snapshot of what they can pay attention to in this upcoming NBA season. Everything from all-star designations to big free agent moves to ultimately who you believe is going to win the NBA championship. You also did another column that maybe took a historical look at the NBA and named the best draft pick in the history of every NBA city/franchise. So with that being said, I wanted to ask you about this upcoming season. And the big move in the offseason, of course, was LeBron going to Cleveland. Outside of that move, what do you think was the other big move that happened in the offseason that perhaps no one really talked about quite as much?
I think the next big move was Tyson Chandler back to Dallas. Now, Tyson Chandler is never going to be considered an all-time great player. He's nowhere near your Mount Rushmore of centers. But for some reason, Tyson Chandler going back to Dallas has become a huge thing. He is that defensive anchor. He blocks shots. He rebounds. And seems to have become like this – the leader of that team. This is Dirk Nowitzki's franchise, obviously, but Tyson is sort of the flame for that team that everything kind of revolves around. So his move back to Dallas, despite the fact that Tyson Chandler is honestly about 10 points and 10 rebounds a game due at best, is a big move. And I think this is one of those things where you look at the numbers and you say, why does this matter? But it absolutely matters. That guy has a pull in that locker room at the defensive prowess. I mean, that was the second biggest move of the summer.
Well, I think from the social media chatter as well as perhaps the mainstream media chatter, you talk about the NBA. It's a very star-driven league. One of the biggest stars that kept his name in the news cycle, if you will, for comments about the salary cap and the owners and the players getting money was Kobe Bryant. Kobe Bryant, not bashful when it comes to stating his opinion whenever he does decide to do so. And there's a lot of chatter around Kobe Bryant, his salary, how that impacts the Lakers, whether other players want to play with Kobe Bryant, some of just the general Laker moves in general surrounding Kobe Bryant. So I wanted to get your perspective. I don't think anybody could forecast the Lakers as a playoff team for this season. So given that the Lakers will probably not be a playoff team this season, what are your thoughts on how bad it might get for L.A., the Lakers, that is?
I think the Lakers are looking at the very real possibility of being able to keep their lottery pick. Not to bore people with the details, but basically, if the Lakers finish in the top five in the lottery, they keep the pick from the Steve Nash trade. They keep one of their first-round picks from the Steve Nash trade. That's a very real possibility. They just are a team that just lacks talent. They don't have anybody who is a capable defender. Ed Davis, maybe. Jordan Hill, maybe. But everyone else is average, below average. They have, if you're a guard, the Lakers are the aspirin on the schedule. If you're a guard in the league, you will get 20, 25, or 10 assists, whatever your specialty is. So it's going to get bad for the Lakers. And as far as Kobe, I think his comments were so interesting considering he took $48 million for 2 years and then came with players are overpaid. But then he went on Twitter and talked about, well, the owners are making billions. So he's sort of all over the place. And he's definitely become, Floyd, for a movie reference, he's become Clint Eastwood in Gran Torino. He is get off my lawn guy now. And I just hate that such a great career is going to have this type of ending, because at this point right now, he's MJ in the Wizards jersey. He just never changed teams. And, you know, time is undefeated. But I think it's just a series of organizational moves, his health, a tough conference. I think it's kind of all combined and put the Lakers in the spot that they're in.
Well, Ron, I think the struggles, or I guess the forthcoming struggles of the Lakers this season really ties into some thoughts I had about the Lakers in general as a franchise, which go along with the other article that you wrote, which detailed the best draft picks of every NBA city/franchise. And in reading that list and going team by team, it seems to me that for quite some time, even going back to, you know, the Showtime days, that the Lakers are a team that don't necessarily draft well. And maybe the Showtime days isn't probably the best era. I would say after that, the Lakers don't draft very well as an organization. They depend on always being the attractive destination for free agents. And it seems as though we're in a cycle where LA is not an attractive destination for free agents. Well, let me clarify that. The LA Lakers, that is, they're not an attractive destination. So looking at that and looking at how the Lakers have built their team, I can't name a meaningful draft pick that the Lakers have made in the past 15 years. So looking at how they run their team and looking at all of the organizational challenges between the Buss family and everything that kind of comes with that, what is what do you see as the real issue with maybe how the Lakers have crafted this situation over the past 10 or 15 years?
Well, I think if you look at the Lakers, One, Julius Randle is the highest pick they've had since James Worthy in 1982. So they've never really picked high. But what the Lakers were always able to do, and this goes back to Dr. Buss, the Showtime era, they were always able to find guys who would be willing to sacrifice dollars, sacrifice their game to be part of a winner. Guys like Michael Thompson, Bob McAdoo, you come back, you forward to the Phil Jackson era, you bring in Glenn Rice, guys like that who were stars other places and were willing to sacrifice to be a Laker. That hasn't happened of late. And then you just get a series of bad moves. They totally mishandled the Phil Jackson, Mike D'Antoni coaching situation, / Mike Brown as well. They mishandled that. They gave up the farm for Steve Nash, which, yes, at the time you could say that's a good move, but even for an older, past his prime guard like Steve Nash, it was still too much. We know the Dwight Howard thing, how that went. So they had about 3 moves within about a 3-year span that just all went terrible. And I think you see the cost of not drafting well. And I think people say, well, they haven't had high picks. The Spurs haven't drafted in the lottery since Tim Duncan got there in 1997. But they can find Kawhi Leonard. They can find Tony Parker. They find Ginobili. They can find a guy like Tiago Splitter. So this is, you don't necessarily need a super high pick. And the Lakers have had all the stars. They've had the Shaq. They've had the Kobe Bryant to build around. But they haven't, as you said, they built around being able to pull guys to us because of the Laker brand. But once you can't do that, what else, what's your other plan? I think they haven't had a plan B other than, hey, we're the Lakers. You want to play with us.
Yeah, and it seems as though we're in a certain cycle in the league where no other team really wants to deal with the Lakers because it makes the Lakers better. No one wants to do the Lakers any favors here. So from my standpoint, it almost seems as though people are content to watch this organization drift and fall potentially flat on its face for the next 2 years, just to be able to point the finger at one of the, you know, one of the most recognizable and successful franchises in the league. So I think there won't be any rush to do the Lakers any favors when it comes to free agency, trades, or anything like that. But not to harp too much on the Lakers, but going back to your second article about the best draft picks in these teams' histories, what were some of the surprising moves that you saw, or I guess some of the surprising picks that you saw in compiling that list?
I think what was so interesting about the list, Floyd, is that how the draft is a very complex, kind of awkward and strange process you figure out when you're doing an article. And you even talk about going back to the history of the territorial picks. Now, for those who don't remember what that is, ask your uncle about this one. Well, basically, teams have first right to draft players from their area. So, for instance, Oscar Robertson was drafted by the Cincinnati franchise, which became the Sacramento Kings years later. So, little things like that. But here was an interesting one. The most interesting one had to have been that George Gervin was drafted by him. That was as random a find as you can have. I'm going through Basketball Reference. I'm looking at Phoenix, and George Gervin pops up. I'm like, George Gervin? Like, Spurs George Gervin? That was an interesting one as well. And then I think something just kind of jogs your memory. You forget. You forget Dominique Wilkins was drafted by the Jazz. You forget Dirk Nowitzki was drafted by the Bucks. So it just goes to show you, man, the draft is a very weird thing. But it also can show you that some of these trading for picks and why are teams stockpiling picks? Because if you find that diamond, if you find that one guy, you set. So I think it's a very weird, very interesting process that you're doing research on that type of thing.
You know, One of the things that I realized in looking at that list, which you can find at section357.com, is that the NBA, more so than the NFL, more so than Major League Baseball, is a league that if you draft right, you can have tremendous success for years to come. And it allows you, if you draft right, to be able to assemble a team that you can keep together, hopefully for a few years, at a very inexpensive cost. So I think there's no better example than that recently than the Oklahoma City Thunder, when they drafted Durant, Westbrook, Ibaka, and James Harden in a very short time span. Now, they made some moves, of course, to let Harden go, but just being able to draft all of those guys, they would never be able to assemble all of those guys via free agency, just with the way that, the league is constructed, with all of the salaries that those guys would command. So in the NFL, sure, you get a Peyton Manning, you're probably set. But with a 53-man roster, you can build your team in a way such that if you don't have the best player at that position in the game, you can still succeed. But because of the NBA draft, when you're picking one, maybe two guys every year that are going to make your squad, you really have to get it right in order for your team to have long-term success.
And Floyd, this goes back to the point that you and I talked about in getting ready for the show with the Thunder. That's a perfect example. You couldn't, if you go back and look at some of these articles about who teams have drafted, you are going to be really hard-pressed in the history of the NBA to find a team that found Durant, players like Durant, Harden, Ibaka, and Westbrook, basically four drafts in 5 years, and put that type of talent on the floor, which is what makes the James Harden trade still make you want to grind your teeth, because when you hit that big, like you said, the numbers, you don't have many chances to do it. And the odds say you're not going to be able to do it. So when you are one of them rare cases where you draft that well consecutively, and then you trade one of them for basically 5 cents on the dollar, and if you look at Oklahoma City right now, yeah, you don't want to say, well, I've got to bring up old shit. That smoke with them on Friday, but that trade, man, I really think that they're going to look back at that as the day they close the window on themselves to potentially have one of the all-time great runs as a franchise. Oklahoma City could be the Spurs to me right now. And I think that trade still, man, it really still bothers me that they did that. But to your point, you don't get many chances. I think this is why you have to hit on those picks. When you can get a superstar, you can't miss on them.
I think down here in Atlanta, we will always rue the day when Billy Knight selected Marvin Williams over Chris Paul, because we've seen how those two players' careers have played out. So that just further highlights the point that you have to make it, I'm sorry, you have to make the right pick, and then you have to find a way to keep that talent together. And I do believe wholeheartedly that the OKC fans and organization, they will look back on that opportunity to keep all of those guys together as a missed opportunity to really do something special in the NBA. And looking at this season, of course, with Durant being hurt, with Russell Westbrook being hurt, I wanted to ask you about forecasting the championship, because when I found out that Russell Westbrook was out along with Kevin Durant, my initial thought was, given how long the NBA season is, given the fact that, well, you know, the season doesn't really get serious until after the All-Star break, and also given the fact that you just have to get into the playoffs and then you're set, I said, you know, if OKC can just be decent until both of those guys get back healthy in 2015, more than likely, they can be one of those rare low seeds that has the talent of a high seed that could go very far in the NBA playoffs. What do you think about that?
Oklahoma State, I think the blessing, if you can ever say there's a blessing having your two best players hurt at the same time, is that they will likely both be back by Christmas. And we know, I'm a hardcore NBA fan. I watch it anytime. But really, your season does not start, as you say, until Christmas, maybe through the All-Star break. So I think if you're Oklahoma City, you need to just tread water. And treading water in the West is a difficult thing, because treading water in the West doesn't mean like 500. Because, you know, last year in the East, if you're 500, you're about 5 or 6. In the West, you got to tread closer to like 55%, 60%. So I think the difficulty for Oklahoma City is going to be, can we hang in there till Christmas? Can we not fall too far below 500? Can we stay in there? And then when we get our two guys back, we still have the majority of the season left. But what Oklahoma City now is going to have to do is they're going to have to get some of these young guys, these cheap young guys that they wanted. They didn't want James Harden. The Jeremy Lamb, the Andre Roberson, the Perry Jones. Those guys now have to play. So that 5 cents on the dollar that they got for James Harden has to start turning into 40 and 45 cents on the dollar to keep this team afloat until their guys come back.
Well, Big Shot Ron, looking forward to the eventual champion. You picked the L.A. Clippers as the 2014-2015 NBA champion. Probably not the biggest surprise, although I'm sure some fans were probably wondering why not another San Antonio pick in terms of them repeating this season after winning the title last year. You gave some good rationale for that. But even looking at the Clippers, and you know, not to harp too much on the Lakers, I would also say that that Chris Paul Laker trade that did not happen, I mean, imagine if that trade goes through, how are we talking about the Lakers and the Clippers differently nowadays? But that's, you know, another story for another day. Why did you look at the Clippers and say, this is the champion for this season?
Well, I think to pick the – first of all, I think to pick a team to repeat in this era, it's a really difficult, difficult thing to do. And I think it's not necessarily I'm going with the Spurs or the Machine, but even the Machine breaks down at some point. And 3 straight championships is a difficult thing. After Miami Heat, the Bulls and the Lakers did in the Phil Jackson era, but they really, those are tough times. So to ask a team to make that long journey 3 straight years is tough. The Clippers, to me, have everything you want to win a championship as far as the big stuff. They got the big name coach. They have 2 top 5 players. I'm talking about Chris Paul, Blake Griffin. The Donald Sterling thing is no more. They got new ownership. So they're kind of, to me, playing with no excuses at this point. The Donald Sterling thing hit them last year, and to be as professional as you want to be, I think that really submarines their playoff chances. But so to me, this is the time for them. Chris Paul now. He's in year 10. Blake Griffin, you are now an established star. Doc Rivers, the big coach. It's time for those guys to make that next step. I have questions about whether they're deep enough, especially at the small forward position, but I just think this is their time. This is the year where, for the Clippers, it has to start to come together. And that's why I'm picking it. So I'm picking them really as the team under the gun to win sooner than later.
Well, Big Shot Ron, going back to your article and how you laid out some fun things that might happen in this upcoming NBA season, there's one player I want to ask you about. There's a mythical, or I guess imaginary, title. And perhaps this is at every position, but best big man in the game. Like, there's this sort of label that we like to put on guys, best big man in the game. Lots of people like to believe or claim, I would say, that Dwight Howard is the best big man in the game. Can you make a case for Anthony Davis taking that title away from Dwight Howard anytime soon?
I think, Floyd, if you're not held to positional integrity, Anthony Davis is the best big man in the game. I think it's, and honestly, I don't even think it's really that big of a question. He does everything. The only thing he really doesn't do is shoot threes as a stretch, which is probably going to happen soon because he's just that skilled. But I think when it goes to show you, man, I think this is something that again, you and I as a little bit, I say older fan, but who kind of came up in that generation, how the game is so much different. You know, we came up Olajuwon, Robinson, O'Neal, Ewing, Mourning, even guys like Rick Smith, Brad Doherty. We came up in the era where the big man was the peak. You go back to Moses Malone, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. The game is played now outside in. Everything is pick and roll. It's spread the floor. So you're not going to get the 25 and 12 guy at center anymore. So a guy like Dwight Howard, yeah, his numbers aren't impressive, but you have to also look at what he's playing in, the air he's playing in. So, but to your question, yes, Anthony Davis is the best 16 and over basketball player in the league right now. He's something else with the wingspan, the length, how he runs, block shot. He does everything. So I'm going with him. I agree with you. I think he is the best big man if we just kind of get away from having to pick a center.
And let me ask you this, because I'm not going to pretend that I'm the biggest Dwight Howard fan, because those of you all who have heard this show before know that I'm somewhat critical of Dwight Howard, and that's putting it lightly. But when I look at Anthony Davis, or his game rather, he seems to have that it factor that I don't know what you call it, you know, just the intangibles, as they say, but he seems to have something about the way that he plays the game. When I watch him play, I don't see that with Dwight Howard. So could you give some more context to Anthony Davis? And I mean, as a young guy, he seems to have that it factor that I just don't see with a guy like Dwight Howard right now.
I think what you see is with Anthony Davis is going back to something I just said about the way he runs. He's a guy, he's 6'10", he's a little bit thin, he's about 225, but when you watch him run, it's like watching a small four or a two guard run. And he does things very easily. Like you see him catch the ball high post, he can take two dribbles, get to the rim, and it doesn't look awkward. To watch him block a shot, catch it, out on that. It's very smooth. It's done very easily. I think with Dwight Howard is a guy who's almost, he's in the wrong era. And I'm not saying, so don't get me wrong, I'm not saying Dwight Howard would have killed a prime Shaq, a prime Olajuwon, a prime Robinson. But he's in the wrong era because the game is played a way that does not fit him. He's somebody who, yeah, he's never going to be a ballet dancer on the post. But he was guy built for, you throw the ball into him 25 times a night. And in this era, he's somebody who can get lost on the floor. And he has to kind of create his own shots just by the sheer force of his strength and his athleticism. So watching the two of them play, I can see where you would say that. And I think it's Anthony Davis's incredible talent that fits this era. Whereas Dwight is a power player, his strength, his athleticism, but in a league that doesn't really feature low post players.
Well, Big Shot Ron, as we wrap up sort of this beginning of the season look at the NBA, it's always great to talk some hip hop. So if it wasn't apparent to you in your city, wherever you were watching the NBA, it was very apparent to us that the NBA, well, I guess hip hop, seems to get more and more ingrained into the NBA's culture. Of course, we know about Jay-Z and the Brooklyn Nets. We know about Drake and the Raptors. But even looking at just the overall presentation of the product, you had T.I. and Young Thug performing here in ATL. You had Wale performing in Washington, in D.C. for the Wizards. And you also had Kendrick Lamar getting some love with some opening title, or I guess opening song props when it comes to some of the NBA broadcast shows. So, Big Shot Ron, what are your thoughts on that? Just with how much further hip-hop seems to be embedded into the NBA culture right now?
I actually want to throw this back to you because you're more our hip-hop curator. Is this Adam Silver being really accepting of hip-hop? Or is this more him saying, I'm going to do things that David Stern didn't do? Because we knew David Stern was not a fan of hip-hop culture, the hip-hop generation, going back to the dress code. So is this Adam Silver saying, I'm really pro-hip-hop? Or is this him like, yeah, y'all just kind of do, I'll let you guys kind of do what you want to with that and just don't do anything to embarrass me?
You know, that's a great question. I think that it's hard to ignore how hip-hop has become mainstream. And I definitely believe that with Jay-Z being involved in the Nets ownership and Drake being a part of the, I guess, the marketing package ambassadorship of the Raptors, there are some more formal links to this project. I think Usher was at one time, or maybe still might be, owner of the Cavs, and I believe Nelly has a stake in the Bobcats, I believe. So with all that being said, I believe that Silver, you can't ignore, and I think he has not ignored the fact that this culture is very intimately tied with the product on the court, from the intros to the players themselves. You can't ignore that the players on the court are very tied in with the rappers and just the entire culture. So I think they're trying to find a way to do it that seems as harmless as possible, if I can use that word. I know there's going to always be some cringing from somebody about how it happens, but I believe that when it comes to trying to get fans off their couches and into the arenas, they're trying to make this perhaps into a concert / game experience, because if that's what's going to get you off your couch, you know, watch a league pass and actually buying a ticket, then I believe that's the ultimate motivation for any owner as well as the commissioner.
Now, one quick question before we close out. So how do you think the conversation went in some of these NBA front offices? You know, they have marketing people. They put together the intro packages, the lighting, the music. You know, they have, like, professional Hollywood people who do this. What do you think the conversation was, man, when they said, okay, we're going to use Bobby Shmurda as our intro song for our players? Because, yeah, you could use the instrumental, but somebody has to load that MP3 or whatever onto the system. And when they saw that title, what do you think actually happened, man?
Man, I would have loved to have been a fly on the room when that decision was made, because I think there's always that potential for a slight cringe when it comes to those powers that be, when they think about their sponsors and who their audience is. And, you know, if that's what's going to move the meter, if that's what's going to get more people to watch, I believe that's what ultimately drives them to go along with it. But you can't ignore Bobby Shmurda, either the song or the video meme, as one of the most talked about and played songs and memes of 2014. And I think that all of these broadcast networks and shows, they're always chasing what's relevant. They don't care what it is. If it's relevant, they want it because it means more eyeballs, which in turn means hopefully for them more viewer and sponsorship dollars. So I think they just want to be wherever the relevant conversation is, man, even if it's Bobby Shmurda.
Speaking of Bobby Shmurda, the end of the year hip hop and review show, stay tuned for that. I'm pretty sure old Bobby is going to make another appearance on the second 357 show. But as we close things out, man, Floyd, any final thoughts? I know you're a Hawks fan, so is there some Hawks thoughts or just something on this season that you have that people maybe are going to look out for, something that you're looking for?
I don't really have any big thoughts on the Hawks. I'm pretty much I just wait and see into how we look around mid-season. Al Horford is back, so that's adding a piece that we didn't really have for much of last year. And the Hawks are right around a 500 team. I think that they are – going to be very sort of in the shadows most of the season. But when you look up at the end of the year, they'll be battling for that last playoff spot, and they probably will somewhere be, you know, from 7 to 9 in terms of the NBA. So, you know, no surprises, no real big news, but, you know, looking forward to a good season and looking forward to a very competitive season. It seems like this is going to be a very competitive year all the way around in the NBA.
My final thought actually is the Hawks, Lloyd. And Donald Sterling basically took over the playoffs last year. As much as people are going to remember the Spurs winning the championship, the Donald Sterling saga is going to be greatly remembered. So my thought, sort of the story I'm looking for, I'm following the Hawks. And I want to see if Kasem Reed, if the constituency down there, if they can really make an ownership group happen for Dominique Wilkins / Chris Webb. I think one thing, we talk about race and sport, it sometimes it just simply goes back to who owns the team. And I'm really interested to see is how seriously does the Chris Webber and or Dominique Wilkins bid for the Hawks go? Because I think that I'm not going to go far as saying landmark. I think it's important that you get minority ownership in sport, and especially in the town that Atlanta, that is a very African-American, urban culture populated city. So I'm kind of watching that one. I don't know what your thoughts on that as an ATL citizen, but I'm keeping an eye on that, I think, over the course of this season, maybe hopefully into the next summer.
Yeah, man, when it comes to that ownership situation, I'm not trying to, I guess, I will mean that. I'm not one to count someone else's dollars in their wallet, so I think part of me was always a tad bit skeptical in terms of how much cash Neek had to really be a part of that conversation. I know Chris Webber has made tons of money in his career, so I think that he's a very viable option just from a financial standpoint if you look at it. But I would love to see Neek a part of that, however it could happen, just because of what he's meant to Atlanta, and I think that it would really mean a lot for the city, the franchise, and all the fans for Dominique to be involved. I mean, filtering is called the highlight factory, you know, in some old to Dominique Wilkins being the human highlight film. So I would love for Neek to get that opportunity if it should come his way. So with that being said, we'll keep our eyes on that, and as well as other teams and storylines in the NBA as they come across our radar. But as with most good things, it has to come to an end. So that does it for this episode of the Section 357 show. Good luck to you and your favorite teams out there, wherever you might be. And always check us out on Twitter at Section 357, as well as on Section357.com. You can download this podcast and others on iTunes, on Stitcher, as well as on Podomatic. With that being said, good luck to you and your favorite teams out there, wherever you might be. This has been the Section 357 show, where we always have the best seats in the house. Until next time, take care.